run. Stop the run. Can't stop the run. We can't stop the run. And welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop. You guys should know that by now because we're 12 episodes in. And we did the interviews last week. Please let us know how you what you thought of those episodes. We might do some more of those. And because you never know where we're going to wind up and when we're going to get a chance to interview somebody. So, you know, the sudden drive-by interview.
Ooh, it might happen.
Yeah. So, and that was the voice of Trish Coughlin, ladies and gentlemen, who boosted her own car here today because we are doing Gone in 60 Seconds.
Because I'm serious about my fucking research when it comes to these movie podcasts, guys.
That's right.
I boosted a 1958 Cadillac Eldorado.
Very nice, very nice.
Codename Patricia.
And for any of our police officers who are maybe fans of the show, we're just, that's not true.
I honestly wouldn't know how to boost a car. I know how to change a tire, and that really is where my limits are.
There you go. And of course, in the our other corner, the man who, I don't know, ran over a pedestrian when he came over?
Almost, actually. That entrance in here is a little sketchy. I can't...
McNair, everybody.
I have my own car. I didn't boost one, but there's an ignition recall on it, so every day is a gamble when I hop in and turn the key.
That's what we all like to hear when you're on the
But, like, what kind of gamble? It just won't start, or...
Oh, actually, there's,
it'll
like,
just explode.
There's been deaths, apparently. I really should get it into my dealership. Yeah.
For sure.
For the death line.
That is deeply, deeply concerning.
There might be like some ironic karmic thing. Somebody tries to boost your car.
Although
no one would steal my car. That would never happen.
Well, before we get into the movies, this is actually our first one where we got together after Halloween. So how was Halloween for you guys?
It was really exciting keeping up the theme of everything I do is on VHS. I had a friend over and we've been friends for, I don't know, 17 or 18 years now, and he is a 9-year-old kid. So when we were teenagers, we used to get together and play the Nightmare board game. You guys remember Nightmare?
I do remember. Yeah. Never played it.
Never played it, but I remember the ads.
I always wanted
the spooky video board game. Well, I have it and all of its sequels, so maybe we'll do a special podcast where we turn the mic on and play while the gatekeeper yells at us.
We get drunk and do it.
Totally. I couldn't get super drunk because there was a 9-year-old in the room. But yeah, it was great to share something that I had shared with his dad, with him, and he really enjoyed it and actually won. And in 17 years, I've never seen anybody beat that game. So it was it was pretty good time. No costumes or excitement for me. What about you guys?
Oh, mine wasn't too exciting. Like I went to that horror-thon that we were talking about at the Globe.
The 12-hour marathon.
I did not last the 12 hours.
Where did you tap out?
I tapped out most of the way through Gremlins.
How many hours was that?
That was about, let's see, started at 7.
5.5, probably.
7 hours?
Oh. Oof, that's
I lasted over 7
that's
hours.
That's a good haul. I don't think I could... hold the constitution.
There was one disappointment to it. I was dressed up in like my Tina Belcher outfit, but it was like cold out, so I had my jacket on. But I don't think anybody knew who I was. I think they just thought I was a girl in a jean skirt and glasses. Like, I'm worried that people didn't think it was a costume.
It's very specific.
You're standing there cold in your jacket.
You needed a name tag.
What's weird is somebody was dressed up as Bob and Linda. Nice. And I was like, should I introduce myself to them? I don't know.
They should already know.
Then my Tina was like going, I'm very nervous about this. I can't talk to strangers. But yeah, no, it was pretty good. They played Tales of Halloween, which was really, I really enjoyed it.
Cool.
It was good.
I wanted to watch that prior to Halloween, but it just didn't happen. My Halloween was very busy. I was, of course, over at Words and Pictures for the Halloween Comic Fest during the day. Then it came back to Invader HQ to hand out candy and other assorted goods, comic books specifically, to the little gremlins that were knocking on my door. And then I got into my Kingdom Hearts Organization 13 costume and went down to Dickens Pub here in Calgary for their annual Hang the DJ Halloween event, and it was pretty awesome. There were some pretty cool costumes down there. So there was a kick-ass Mr. Freeze.
Really?
I saw a picture of that actually on somebody's
I think
social media.
It was probably the one I posted.
One of my friends got into trouble for his Predator outfit, so...
Why would he get in trouble for Predator?
It was just fishnets.
It was too good.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Oh, no, no. It's like Predator, the not sexual Predator.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I should have been specific.
You need to specify.
Yeah, yeah. The Predator, the movie.
They
Predator.
Both wear fishnets, though.
Yeah, true. But one is just so much worse than the other.
All right. Well, you know, let's get to it. That's a, you know, we had all had an awesome Halloween. We hope you guys did too. Even though for you guys, it's like a week in November. Why are you guys still talking about Halloween? Because we fucking love Halloween.
Halloween is amazing, guys.
That's right.
It's so, better of course, than Christmas. You guys saw it when you downloaded it. It is gone in 60 seconds. And we're doing the 1974 movie that you guys probably didn't even know existed.
I did not.
I did until I watched it. And I'm like, oh.
And then we did, of course, the 2000 Nicolas Cage. I was gonna add an adjective there, but I can't.
No. Nicolas Cage is, if you say Nicolas movie. Cage in front of anything, people know.
Okay, well,
yeah, it's a Nicolas Cage-ish movie.
The 1974 movie is written and directed and stars H.B. quote Toby unquote Helicki, who is Mandrian Pace or Vikinsky, depending who you're talking to in the film.
I know.
It's Maindrain.
Maindrain. I thought it was Maindrain.
Maindrain. Who? Okay, Maindrain.
It reads like Maindrain.
Maindrain. Maindrain.
It's Maindrain, but it really depended on who was saying it.
Yeah.
or who was saying the ADR off camera.
All of these names in this movie were crazy. So he was Maindrain Pace. Marion Busia
was a pumpkin chase.
Pumpkin chase.
That's always a great Halloween event, by the way.
Yep, pumpkin chase.
The great pumpkin chase.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, I could name these actors and you won't know a damn one of them because they were all friends and family of Mr. H.B. Helicki, who funded this movie himself and cast friends and family and, in some cases, people walking down the street.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
He also did the vast majority of the stunt driving and all the driving for Eleanor.
Yes, yes. And this movie features the longest chase sequence I've ever seen put to screen.
It actually is the longest sequence in film. Yep, 40 minutes.
Yeah, it runs. That's because there's 40 minutes.
Several parts where he stops, waits for everybody else to wipe out, and then starts again.
And let's just put this in perspective, people. This movie's just a little over 90 minutes long, so it is almost half the film.
Thank God, because the rest of the quote-unquote movie is a little bit insufferable.
Does it also feature the longest portion of a movie where all you hear is stuff that's just audio over top of people who actually aren't speaking?
There's so much ADR in this movie. When they actually have people on screen, they're still not talking.
I'm so angry.
Everybody's, like, for the first good half of the movie, the ADR, because they just shot shit. You know, like that cold open where I didn't even get it. They were just talking about picking up cars at a derailed train.
I think the idea was that he's okay. This is the one item of it that actually I liked about it. He's an insurance guy. He works for an insurance. He's an insurance investigator.
So he's got the inside track on these cars.
Yeah. So he redoes like the insurance for all the other cars. Like he changes stuff around. Like they take off VIN numbers. They do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's actually the one note I actually liked about this movie. But yeah, he's just there investigating these cars apparently that got hit by a train because that's something that they do.
Yeah, but fun fact, a real train derailment.
It was a real. They heard about it and they ran over and shot it.
Opportunistic filmmaker.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he owned all the cars in here, and during that big chase sequence, we'll get to that. We should run the trailer.
Let's do it.
Maindrain Pace, number one car thief in America. He'll steal anything, anytime, as long as it's insured.
My horoscope this morning.
Business, stealing cars, and now he's got to fill the biggest contract yet.
We're going to deliver over 40 cars to docks by Saturday.
That's a sad story.
Should have listened.
You can lock your car, but if he wants it, it's gone in 60 seconds. His plan, even for a pro. times when you steal a car, you get more than you bargained for.
Holy shit!
Error.
Who is it?
Police!
Oh, damn, thing's loaded.
Fasten your seatbelt for what CarCraft magazine calls the most hair-raising chase scene ever filmed. Hollywood Reporter says it's a thrill a minute. You owe it to your car to see Gone in 60 Seconds. It's Grand Theft Entertainment. Gone in 60 Seconds.
Okay, so that was the trailer for Gone in 60 Seconds, 1974 Hillicky film. And that was probably more plot that you got in that small trailer than we got in the 90 minutes.
I had to read the Wikipedia. Because I didn't quite get what on earth was going on.
Yeah, you know, they do piece it together along the way that he's got to steal these cars and deliver them to the docks at a certain time. But I don't even think you see the docks.
Well, what they do is they have a bit where they show him on a boat, getting on another boat next to a guy, but with ADR over top of it going, can you deliver me all these cars by Thursday? Yes, I can deliver all these. They're not talking.
Yeah. But it's just... About halfway through the film, you actually get some on-screen dialogue, but...
but
the first at least 15 minutes is just, like, narration.
It is, yeah.
Like, there's other bits about it, too, where it's like they're in the garage, and it's ADR, but it's supposed to be the guys in the garage talking as they're working on a car, but their mouths aren't moving.
No.
But they're making the film look like that's the audio that they're saying to each other.
Yeah, it was very strange. I think they filmed all that stuff after they filmed all the chase sequences and stuff that they wanted and the car stuff. And
I think they probably gave it to somebody and the ADR was done because it's like, dude, there's nothing in here I can do anything with. We have to get a plot in here somewhere.
I read somewhere that the editor had asked for a script to help put this movie together. And he just drew a circle on a piece of paper saying, inside, that's your Dust Bowl. There's your script.
Yeah, so, he went around it twice. Yeah,
he went around it twice.
I felt that, especially like, not even like afterthought, but just while we're watching it, I felt that all the stuff weirdly strung together in the beginning was just like a vehicle in itself just to deliver the chase scene. Like this whole thing... Yeah. Was so that Toby could crash 93 cars. He destroys 93 cars.
93 cars in this movie. He owned every single one of them, and I wound up buying a few more.
Extra, yeah.
God, yeah.
There's some pretty incredible crashes, and this movie, like, the best actors are the cars, for sure. Like, every line is so forced and so terrible.
Oh, there's that opening sequence.
It's so bad.
I think he's talking to Pumpkin. I think his brother's in the room. And you can see him actually looking down at the table where there's probably a script or at least rough outline of the dialogue he's supposed to say sitting there. It's just so obvious.
I just got married.
To call this a B film is to be giving it a lot of credit in the alphabet. it's definitely a 42nd Street knockoff C-level film. I don't even think 42nd Street would air this one. It was probably three blocks down from that.
Yeah, I did better shorts in high school. With more believable dialogue.
I did like some of the chase stuff.
When we did the Ghostbusters Save Christmas, that was a better script than the script.
So, you know, when they're going to steal... before we get to the stuff, he's trying to put his team together. And for some reason, when he walks in on his brother's wedding, every time he talks to his brother, it's completely combative. Like, why is his brother even there?
Well, you get the impression with that stuff, I think, that... You know, they're both partners in this weird scam, and he's like already done. So there's already like history. And you get a taste of that in 2000, Gone in 60 Seconds, where it's like the old guy's retired, when they've kind of switched the dynamic.
I think they took that, they took that as the idea to have that struggle.
Right. Yeah, it gives a little more background, because there's like zero backstory with this movie, like with the 74 one. It's just like, we're doing this weird thing. And I was trying to wrap my head around this key part of the theft with the insurance. Well, we'll only steal cars that are insured. Why?
I think it was when they were doing the cars, they flipped them over, and like I say, they take out the VIN numbers,
they're stealing the cars. If they're insured, the victims get their money back. So he only wanted to thieve from people who could afford to have their cards stolen, because they're going to get their money back, which I found kind of ironic considering how many cars were destroyed when he stole Eleanor. Like, really? You're a jackass. You almost killed, a dozen people.
Maybe more.
More. Yeah. I'm like, that he leaves this wake of terror and mayhem behind him, and the media is covering it the whole way, this big long chase.
To be fair, like the terror and mayhem, that whole thought of like thinking that that's not terrible carries through in the remake. Like, they have in the remake, the bad guy is wanted for like murder one and homicide, but they're like the guys who are in car theft, like Grand Theft Auto or the Grab unit or whatever, they're like, oh, but we're gonna get him. Like, screw the homicide guys.
Well, I mean, yeah. Those detectives weren't homicide detectives.
They were the Grab guys.
Yeah.
And the homicide was telling them to fuck off.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, screw them.
Well, it's because they were stealing the cars for this other mark. So, you know.
Yeah.
They're supposed to catch the car thieves, but not, you know, keep your hands off the murderer.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, it's kind of like these guys were like going, okay, the Grab guys, like car theft is just so much more intense and so much more important than homicide, was what I was getting as an impression. And I'm like, get over yourselves, guys.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, they were just working their department. But yeah, I don't want to jump ahead too far.
Yeah,
no, I'm sorry, but that was the one thing. Like, that's a little bit full of yourself to think that you're.
Yeah,
they weren't any worse than the two car thief cops in 74, though. Like,
no,
they start this car chase, which goes across five cities for 40 minutes with wanton destruction everywhere. And the one thing I really found amusing, two things during that car chase scene, is the Eleanor that they eventually end up stealing belongs to the radio DJ that's
reporting
it. And he's a real DJ.
Yes, he was.
I think maybe at that station. But yeah, so they steal his car and they never let on. But then they go from city to city to city with all this destruction and all these units and air units and all this insanity. And every time they report, well, we don't know why. Like, the guys in the cop car who started everything, they can't pick up the radio and go, hey, they stole this car. And then, because if they did, everybody would be like, why the fuck are you driving across five cities? Who cares?
Yeah.
That's obviously not a rare car. There's freaking four of them in the movie.
Yeah.
Three, sorry.
Oh, I love how...
Yeah, they're like, all this stuff is happening, guys. You guys are really overreacting.
I love how he puts his team together and they're all coming back from at the airport. And they just wait, and they just start stealing cars at the airport as people are dropping off. Oh, yeah, that's on the list. Oh, yeah, that's on the list. Oh, yeah, that's on the list.
Yeah, and no problem, right?
No problem, except with Eleanor, because somebody gets into the car before he does.
Yeah, the old lady.
Yeah, the old lady. She owns the car. No, she's just in the car.
Yeah, she's sitting in it. Yeah, it's total nonsense. You know, I felt...
Everything's so convenient when they're thieving these things. I'm like, it was just like going to the grocery store.
The red Cadillac.
Yeah, that's
there's
right.
A tiger in the back
and
seat.
That was the only other one they didn't
wind
up
getting. That was so random. I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, what is going on?
That hot chick was walking away, and it reminded me when the bikini girl. And I actually had to look it up. It wasn't the same person that I thought it was. But when I was a kid, my high school was, and junior high school, was near a strip joint. Yeah, obviously wasn't old enough to go in. But I remember walking by a nearby vehicle back then. And lo and behold, in the backseat was a fucking tiger. A fucking Bengal tiger. I kid you not. And I look at my brother or a friend of ours with us, and I'm like, guys, there's a tiger in the back of that car. No bugger. And they go, look. He's like, there's a fucking tiger in the back of that car. And I found out it was this stripper who used to go around with the tiger. I didn't write it down because it wasn't relevant to this film because it wasn't the same person, but I suspect there was some inspiration by this particular stripper who was touring around with a tiger.
See, I was also really upset. I'm like, you left that tiger in your car with the windows rolled up on a hot day. Yeah. Like, you're a dick.
Yeah,
it's
exactly,
74. Bitch. It's fine.
I would like to feed you to your tiger because you're an asshole.
Yeah.
Yeah, the car theft in the 1974 movie is not a big deal.
No.
They get them all right away.
They're all unlocked.
It's like 20 minutes. Like, hey, we got them all. You don't even see them all. They do that one warehouse that's like, you know, as wide as two cars and then goes for 14 blocks that they have them all lined up down in that really weird walk-by.
And what
remember when Pumpkin's crying for no reason?
No.
Do you remember that scene?
Oh, I remember that endless fucking scene. Yeah. Where he's walking down.
It goes on forever. He's walking down the cars, pondering his cars. And I'm suspecting that because she's in love with his brother.
And she's just sitting here just like...
But I get the feeling she's got some sort of regret and actually wants Helicki's character, Madrian.
See, I thought she was with Madrian.
No, she was with Eugene. She's with Eugene.
No, no. Pumpkin is the main character's wife.
Yeah, Pumpkin's with Mandarin.
The brother's wife. No,
yeah. This is how big, it's how vague. Messed up it's this
vague.
Movie is.
It's vague. Well, what's stupid, too, is like when they go to get his brother, he keeps telling her is that you make sure he gets on the plane. You're the one who has to get him on the plane. Like, why? What the fuck is it her responsibility to do that for?
As I always thought she was with
Eugene.
See,
I can get why you thought. No.
She's the wife of the main character.
See, but I don't even think they were married. I thought that was the whole thing was like, we should be together.
Pumpkin Chase, Eugene Chase. Stanley Chase. Okay, there's a whole bunch of them. They're all Chases except for Paces. Huh?
Yeah.
Pace and Chase?
Oh, Paces, but Chase.
Somebody wasn't thinking clearly on that. Oh, wait. No, his brother was Corliss. What am I thinking?
No idea. Pumpkin,
no, we have
Pumpkin's
no idea.
His
brother was Corliss. You know what it is? So, leading up to this sequence, you know, they steal the cars with ease. And then there's this, like, still the animosity. It's like, we're done. I want to go on my honeymoon, whatever. And they have that weird fight where he just, like, pushes him down.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, you're out when I say you're out, whatever, and storms off. And then in the next scene, for some reason, he's gone all Incredible Hulk and the brother's clothes are all ripped in that phone booth. Like, he gets pushed down.
Yeah.
And then his clothes are all torn up. And he phones and...
his brother gives an anonymous tip.
Yeah, he calls
in. I suspect there was some cartoon spill we didn't see.
Maybe. But he calls in the tower.
Eleanor.
Yeah.
And then there's that sequence where it's right after where he's walking down the endless row of cars in the skinny warehouse and Pumpkin's sitting in the chair in the dark looking at a reflective frame. So you don't even see the picture in it.
No.
And she's crying, and I think it's that she knows that her husband's about to get busted because Buddy's angry and he's called it in. So maybe that's why.
My other thought, and I pitched
this to you when we talked last week, is that it actually was just for her B-reel. So, like, when she's pitching her acting, right? It was like, I can show emotions.
No, I thought that's what I thought it was. I thought, like, you know, when you have those moments in movies where it's, like, just a panning shot and there's, like, there's that person in that contemplative moment. They're like, oh, my God, like, all this emotion's happening. That's what she was aiming for and fucking failed miserably. Like, but because they kept doing it. Like, they panned over her, like, six times.
They should have done
that. He's walking through the cars. Ooh, Pumpkin. He's walking through.
Right at the end of that, she should have gone, end scene.
Yeah, unseen. Yeah, she totally.
It
should've.
Would have looked less forced if she'd done that.
Yeah,
it was the most emotion you got out of anybody in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Completely misplaced. But and let's take a moment to talk about Pumpkin's hair in this movie.
Oh, see,
it's
I loved her hair. Her hair was amazing.
Like, she's sitting in that giant office
that
chair,
bouffant,
and the hair is end to end. Like, it must be like a foot in every direction out from her head.
I loved it.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I don't know how she did it. I want
and
to know.
And conveyed such strong emotion.
No, her hair has great acting. Chops.
It does, yeah. Second to the cars, Pumpkin's hair is
Pumpkin's
the best
hair.
Actor.
Well, I was looking in the credits.
Oh, the tiger.
Wasn't there.
No, I'll put the tiger there. Above Pumpkin's
the tiger,
hair.
He really felt his motivation in that scene.
Yeah, I'm in a car. It's hot. I'm pissed off. I get it.
Yeah.
I totally understand. Yeah, I think
better than any car alarm for sure.
Was there any car alarms
there,
in this movie?
In the last
Eleanor.
Yeah.
Eleanor.
And it goes off forever.
Oh yeah, he doesn't decide to turn it off until he's right in front of the police officers. But do you guys remember the scene where I don't even remember what character was stealing the car while walking the dog? Hops in the car. What the fuck happened to the dog? Just drops the leash like
he stole the dog.
Somebody, so he just left his dog somewhere. Yeah, maybe he stole the dog just as a distraction or something.
I think there was this one too at one point too. Somebody has a bike, which I actually enjoyed. They rode up and then
to
put
the
bike.
They stole that Rolls limo.
They stole the Rolls limo. Yeah. I'm like going riding a bike to steal a car? That actually makes sense. Way to go, guys.
Yeah. And then he puts it in the back seat. Like, it's in there.
Yeah, he doesn't leave his bike.
Awesome. Yeah, that's sweet.
On the rare occasion
where they show you that they're stealing a car, they're all actually pretty entertaining. One of my favorites,
there's just not a lot of setup for them. They just happen.
Totally. And the list, I like the list in the original one because, like, it clearly was like, hey, guys, here's the 48 cars I could afford for $200 at auction, so this is going to be our wish list, right? Mm-hmm. It's some really cool stuff, that Manta car I'd never seen before and a few other things. But my favorite one, when they steal the big rig. Mm-hmm. Like, that's on your, like, Colombian drug cartel car.
Is that
we need this Freightliner. I think it was a Freightliner, like a 73 or 74 Freightliner.
I don't know. And why wasn't that classic fire truck? Or no, dump truck.
That garbage truck.
That garbage truck should have been on the list.
I love that, like, thing. I want to buy one.
That was amazing. That beautiful, like, 50s garbage truck.
And he paid less than $200 for that thing.
Yeah. And well, most of the cars he got for less than $200.
top of a Charger. Challenger.
It was doubly distressing because I love that dump truck and that Charger.
And you know, they say that scene, because that truck must weigh like 9 million pounds, they cabled it and pulled it over and they were like super visible. I watched it on YouTube in fairly good quality, and I didn't notice.
No,
the cables
I saw that listing too, but it was the release that I told you about because I assume you guys watched the same one I did on YouTube.
Yeah,
that link I gave you, and it was an 84 re-release.
Oh, okay,
because there was in memoriam of Helicki.
He passed away in 89.
So that re-release, my guess that re-release was probably sometime after that, probably around maybe 2000. And then,
yeah, the DVD release. That's right. DVD they did a 25th anniversary. Yeah,
there was a re-release.
Oh, so maybe they just did some work on it.
Yeah, so I think maybe they cleaned up that scene.
Maybe. But I really love that truck. But yeah, the Freightliner was just. And they had a lot of really bizarrely unique cars. And then there was that one weird Jeep. That Baja Jeep that one, like, pseudo celebrity guy who actually in a movie of terrible actors was probably the worst. Like, when he was delivering lines, what was that? I'm gonna bring his name up because it was really hilarious. And he's a real guy. I think he's a real race car driver.
Yeah, actually, when they're stealing the cars in this movie and you see the background people, and especially during the chase scenes and people reacting, you know, a fake accident happens.
Oh,
and those are real people reacting to it. So when the cops don't stop, you see them yelling at cars and stuff. Why aren't you stopping? That kind of thing. Those are real reactions because they don't know a fucking movie's happening. Those are real dudes.
Yeah, so we'll see. Then that's how you get the most authentic acting you're going to get out of this movie.
Yeah, exactly, which is probably why those were the best parts.
Yeah, I got that guy. So there's this crazy, like, off-road Baja Jeep thing that they steal that's, like, super unique looking. It's, like, the one of one, remember? And it was, like, I think it was covered for $200,000 or some insane thing. I think that's what the insurance guys were saying. Mm. But so his name is Parnelli Jones, his real name and name in the film. And he is a real off-roads motorsports guy, was inducted in the Hall of Fame in 78, so after the movie. But, yeah, he by far, like, delivering lines. Like, yeah, you got your friends and they're reading off the table, but this dude just butchers line after line after line. It was actually sort of hilarious to watch him on screen.
And I did mention Helicki had passed away in, what did I say?
89.
To no one's surprise, it was failed stunt.
Okay. I thought it was a random balloon accident.
No.
Not this time, but one day you'll be right with that.
One day.
Oh, okay. hey, balloons kill over 0.07 people every 10 years.
It's more than sharks, people.
It is more than sharks. That's true. They were shooting Gone in 60 Seconds 2, Another 60 Seconds, and that wasn't the title. But so he's doing a stunt, and this water tower is supposed to fall and, like, whatever, right? So awesome. But when the water tower came down, it sheared a light pole.
Oh.
He was doing a stunt in a car, and it dropped on him and killed him instantly.
Oh.
Yeah. And he actually got severely injured in the first one due to many times, but the most severe one was crashing into a light pole.
Yeah, and what happened there is
you see in the film as
every accident is in the film.
They left it in there.
So he's screaming. He's doing like 90 miles an hour down the freeway.
So light poles were out for him.
Yeah, they were. Was it a light pole? It was a pole. I don't know.
It was some sort of...
It fell, but... Yeah. So one of the crew clipped him. So he's driving Eleanor, and there's that big blue Cadillac that he just nudges, right? And he hits the pole, and depending on where you read, it was like, oh, he was minorly injured, and then he shot the next week. But I had read, actually, that he was unconscious.
I heard... That's when I read.
Yeah. Because it spins. Like, it's a crate. Like, you see it.
It's a harsh accident. It's not...
Yeah. Oh, he almost wipes out some people, too.
Like, and then he gets up, though.
He's not quite in control of the car. He almost wipes out.
Most times. When he gets up, though, from that accident, he goes, did we get it?
Yeah.
You know, like unconcerned. But yeah, there's lots of occasions where there's accidents in the film and people run over to help and it's like real people. Yeah. They don't know what's going on. And there's actually in the Dust Bowl where like all the model planes, that weird sequence. Oh, through them. And I like the one guy who runs in front of Eleanor and grabs the model plane and runs away. Like, I think at this point you've learned that that guy isn't really a great stunt driver. Kind of risky. But he plows into a cop car and there's a scene where a cop like dives up over the back of the car and like rolls out of the way. Well, that wasn't supposed to happen. And he almost killed that guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The scene,
and it's in the movie.
Yeah, the chase scene at one point where he hits a car at that dealership,
Cadillac dealership.
Yeah, the Cadillac dealership, and he owned the first two cars, and then it was the dealership's cars past that. But he hit with such force,
he did too.
The cop hit
damaged.
It.
Oh, it was he the cop. The yeah, cop it wasn't Hillary.
And what
yet.
They had done is they put an oil slick under the first car to give it a little momentum so that it would move into the second. And it, like you watch it moves the whole line.
Yeah. Yeah. And Hillicky had to buy every car in that line.
Yeah. Luckily, that was the used side.
Yes,
so he didn't have to buy like six brand new Cadillacs. Yeah. And there were occasions too, lots where they would have to cut filming, and he would work on like the shop they show is his real shop.
Don't feel upset. Hey, you know you don't need a brand new Cadillac. Some of the old Cadillacs.
Yeah, he busted his ass to make this film happen. Yeah.
He really did. Yeah, he owned a salvage yard and a towing company because I had looked him up a little bit and read about him. And his family had a towing company, so he kind of carried on whatever, set up shop, had an impound lot, so it could be where a lot of these cars came from, as well as towing company. And so the shop you see in the film is actually his shop. But when they would, you know, destroy a bunch of
Cadillacs. Did his water heater do that cool?
But the hidden insurance plate thing.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Oh, I love that bit. That
was
really
cool.
That was
cool, yeah. And so, yeah, he would, like, cut shooting, whatever, when they would run out of money, or he'd have to buy six new Cadillacs, and he would work on cars to earn more cash, and then they would shoot again, which is probably why it's so pieced together, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that this, of all the movies I've ever watched, this is, like, probably the finest example of like Gonzo filmmaking ever.
Oh yeah.
Oh, like yeah.
I wrote that down.
Gonzo filmmaking. Yes. Yeah. Totally, it totally is. Like it's just like a miracle of like determination, right? I am going to make a movie and
One man's like,
vision was a 40-minute car chase and he pulled it off.
Do we like he was wearing makeup for when he was stealing to make himself look like an older
guy like a wig and
did we actually see him do that makeup? Like, it was so weird because he was in the car. I'm like, oh, I thought that was supposed to... Why does Mandrian look like that? Like, what's going on here?
They hand out the wigs, though.
Did they? Okay. Scene, I don't remember
must have blacked out.
Yeah. No, they do it. Like, they show him a couple times, I think, doing that.
Yep. And one of the guys, he's like, where's your wig? And he's like, it itches. And
oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but they all have, like, weird, goofy disguises. And then there's that like, hilarious bit when, you know, after the 40-minute car chase and he's destroyed Eleanor, he pulls into a car wash for some reason, and there's another one.
Well, no, to hide.
Yeah.
Was it to hide, or did he see the other Eleanor?
No, I always thought he went in there and he just saw the other Eleanor. He's like, shit.
I'd like to just give him enough credit that he saw it during the chase, but it was mostly to hide.
Yeah, so he pulls in and there's this other Eleanor, whatever, and like his car is like fucked completely. Yeah. I mean, it hit a pole.
Yeah,
it's done. It's
I have to say, this is one of those, like, you know, every time you see some cars where you're like amazed at how they keep going.
Yeah.
This is
one
of those
made
cars.
A really epic jump with that car.
Oh, man.
Like, you know, in modern cinema, this thing went
30 feet in the air.
Yeah.
And 120
feet distance.
20 or 70.
Yeah, it was pretty
huge.
Big.
Over 100 feet.
I mean, yeah, there was a ramp or whatever, but that was it. Like, the modern movies, they would either just CGI it or use gas catapults.
Yeah.
So
it was an incredible stunt, and they milked that stunt.
Holy
man, that
shit.
Slow, that insane slow motion jump
like for 3 minutes.
Ever.
Yeah, but I mean, it really,
it was an awesome
putting
stunt.
In all that
it was an
stuff,
awesome
you're
stunt.
Gonna be
and
milking
he him. Compacted 10 vertebrae doing that stunt. And he said he was fine, but he never walked right.
Yeah.
The
DP said that he never walked the same after.
Yeah, you can't get that much impact on your body. Like, you don't have the suspension on it. You don't have... That's why they CGI
that car had
stuff.
No suspension left by the time it hit that ramp. It was so obvious, though. Hey, this gleaming ramp. And that was like a traffic accident. right? He was like, watch out for the traffic accident, and it comes flying over the hill and like nearly clips everybody, probably almost by accident, jumps at whatever. And my favorite part of that is the burnout when he lands, and he just burns out and burns out and burns out until all the smoke covers the whole scene.
Yeah.
And then it cuts, and he just jumps and drives away.
Yeah, they cut to the wider shot, and it's a cut and jump to the...
No burnout.
Nothing, just, no burnout.
That never
nothing.
Happened. Yeah. That was a great... That's like the most filmmaky moment, you know? It was very artistic. That shot was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then, of course, all like the 40 cop cars come barreling over and crash into everything.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well,
you know, none of the cop cars have brakes.
Oh, no.
None of the cops could drive a cop car.
Oh, no, except the unmarked...
Those two guys went the fucking distance, man.
Yeah.
But like every time, like basically what he had to do was get to a spot and stop and wait for the cop cars to just spin out on their own.
Yeah, we had so many moments where it's like, we've got him now. Oh, we don't.
Oh, we've got him now. It's like, oh, a ditch. Oh, no.
And during this, they're always cutting away to witnesses, right? And one of my favorite moments in the movie where they're going through a small crowd, and
the lady
with the umbrella, like clearly some younger person in old person drag, whacking the car with their umbrella. It was so weird.
And then they interview her later.
And I was thrilled. I was like, yes, that paid off.
That threw me, because like I saw it and I'm just like, what's
happening? I damaged my best umbrella.
Yeah, that's
so funny.
It was amazing.
And the other couple. Yeah, we see this kind of stuff all the time. What? Well, we come to the park every day. Like, I don't imagine they even knew what was going on.
It made me wonder if they just interviewed some random people about the park.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Are you talking about the birds?
Oh, and then, like, who was the mayor of, like, Pasadena?
Yamamoto, or...
Yeah, it was the actual mayor.
It's the actual guy.
Yeah.
And the chase scene interrupts, really cool. And they're like, he's talking about building a new sheriff station. And they're like, where's all this money coming from? And he's like, and then the car burns through, and like, yeah.
What's going on?
They didn't give me any lines past this point.
Sak Yamamoto, yeah. The real mayor of wherever that was.
But yeah, but then the other, you know how they're talking about like all the other cops like joining the chase and like overkill on this whole thing?
Oh, yeah.
Those are the cops when they radio in, there's like, oh no, the other cops get it. They're the ones who just sit back. They're like, yeah, no, we're not getting involved in this
one. Yeah, we're done. Yeah. And the air unit takes like 40 minutes. It's like they're fueling it up.
Oh, yeah. They
wiping the glass down.
15 more minutes. And in any real car chase, it's like, don't bother taking off. This will be over by then.
Yeah. Or they have the poor lady who's just sort of, okay, we've got cars down here. It's down here. Like, she's doing it, and then it sort of stops for a while. Is it over? Oh, yes. Thank goodness.
Yeah, that was good. The, like, weird police switchboard.
Yeah, the switchboard lady was telling us, we have cars going down. You need to go down highway number 6.
Yeah, it sounded all very official. I'm sure that was some kind of data entry place that they were filming in, but
it didn't look
like a sheriff's station.
No, it didn't at all.
No.
The reports felt fairly accurate.
They were good,
though.
The one radio guy was like,
yeah,
really? And it was like some country music station.
Yeah. Now, like the car wash, despite being kind of weird, did he see the car? Did he not see the car? Was kind of ingenious when it finally all worked out, because he switches cars, gets out of his disguise, and then this is all kind of accidental. Gets out of disguise, runs off with the new Eleanor. The car, his car is beat up one, comes out of the car wash,
completely
just destroyed.
Yeah.
The poor girl's just like,
she faints.
But the guy who owns the car wash, the detailing place,
matches
the description of the makeup, the old man makeup.
Yeah, so
he's
bust
the one
him.
Gets so they bust that guy for the theft.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, all very convenient, but at the same time, that was amazing.
And then he like rides off.
He rides off. He goes through
and
a police checkpoint.
And that's the end of the movie.
No, he goes through a police checkpoint before he finally makes
rides off into the
they
sunset.
They just look in. And,
yeah. He looks in. He's like, going, yeah, can you tell me how to get to the freeway, officer?
Oh, yeah. And then he stops him.
Well, you just take a right up here. And,
and then he rides off into the sunset, literally. And there's no payoff for the setup of the movie.
No, that's it. We just assume the cars got
We just
delivered.
Assume they got everywhere they need to go, yeah.
Yeah. And every other car, like, there was not once was there an issue with stealing it. Yeah. Not once.
No, we don't know what happened between him and his brother. We don't know if he's...
Now, we're 40 minutes in this podcast. And that chase sequence would have taken this whole time.
Yeah, the whole time we've been talking.
Yes. Oh, seriously. It's a long, long sequence. But to be fair, I found it entertaining enough. I didn't notice it was 40 minutes.
No, I didn't either.
It was really good. And I really like the false stops.
Yeah, the
when he's like, oh, you got me. No, just kidding. Yeah. Oh, you got me. Just kidding. Yeah, it never gets old, ever. Like, no. It's really hilarious, especially like because they Keystone Cop everybody and it's all bumbling retards.
Yeah, like I think it's like he sort of, it makes sense in that he's like, I'll stop here. I'll just wait for them to mess up.
Yeah.
And then I'll just keep going.
Spin out everywhere.
Now, like, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie for how bad it actually
was. Oh, it's
was.
So bad.
And these,
oh,
and
can we talk about Billy?
Yeah, let's talk about
So Billy, you remember Billy and his three friends going to the party? The like stereotypical 70s black kids?
So weird.
With the comb in his hair and they're smoking dope and they're like talking about girls.
And their car gets wrecked.
They get sideswiped and it gets wrecked and they're still driving to the party and it's breaking down. And for no good reason, these people just keep coming back.
They keep cutting away to these guys in the car doing their just jive talk stuff.
Yep.
For like half an hour during that whole thing, they keep going back, keep going back, keep going back.
Yeah, and they get sideswiped and pushed into a car. And then when he's de-makeuped and he's driving to clean Eleanor, he drives by them.
Again,
and he's like, good luck with your car, Billy. It's like you probably killed 12 fucking people.
Yeah, like you're
he's worried
you're
about
a dick.
Insurance scams.
You're a dick.
Yeah. It's actually, this isn't a chase movie. This is a serial killer movie. And he gets away.
Yeah.
He's Hannibal Lecter in a 73 Mustang.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah. I really like this movie. It was a lot of fun.
It was.
I had a lot of fun watching this.
I think
this movie.
Those guys, I think at one point they're like, "You know what? We should put in like some sort of joke, like these guys that keep going, they just keep running into me, like it'll be funny." It'll be funny, guys. It'll be really funny.
Yeah. And in case anybody's wondering why we didn't do When's Your First Watch, this was our first watch.
Oh yeah,
I think I can safely say for all three of us.
Oh,
yeah,
completely.
I didn't until you guys pitched it to me. I had no idea it was a remake. But
yeah,
I'm glad I do now. I actually I might track down that DVD because it's pretty entertaining. Yeah. I want friends to see it because like it's just like insane cinema nonsense. Yeah. And like just from the fact of how it was made makes it even more fascinating.
I really wanted to do Fast and the Furious, but because there is an old one.
What?
But Universal only bought the name. It has nothing to do
with
it.
Yeah, it has zero to do with it.
They just bought the name.
I did not know there was another Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, there is.
But this one is just, wow. Just, like I got 15 minutes in and I was so mad. Like, all the ADR just made me so furious.
That was a bit frustrating for me, but honestly...
I'm not drunk enough for this movie.
I'm probably... Jeff's probably with me on this one. Once the car chase started, I was fine.
That was so...
Oh, no,
sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's actually an entertaining car chase.
The first half of the movie is pretty painful.
It's weird that the fact that, like, he waits for everybody else to screw up. It is very Keystone Cops. But
I really love the music too. They had that cool like 70s exploitation kind of funk soundtrack. Except during the car chase, there's like a good 5 or 6 minutes where it's like this screeching contemporary jazz for no reason. Like,
I wasn't paying attention to that.
I read that the DVD release, they actually had rights issues, so they've changed the music. So it might actually change how that movie feels a little bit.
Yeah.
It really had that like
the music makes it
crazy feeling, and yeah, the music was really, really great. And that one section where I noticed it because it was so out of place. It's like, what? But yeah, I'd love to reshoot that movie. You just like cut in like, you know, 40 minutes of like actual like acting and then just cut the car chase and
You don't change anything at all. You just cut in
exactly
the all the stuff from the remake. Yeah. Use those characters.
Oh, they're the
oh
worst,
yeah
though.
There we go.
That would be okay. There's your assignment, YouTubers.
Yeah. Take all the car action from the original and splice it in with the horrible acting of the new one, which is shockingly less horrible than the old one, but not by much.
Yes, and we...
It's still, yeah. But
we are talking about a Nicolas Cage movie. Trust me, we were all very excited about this.
It's pretty much a downward spiral from as soon as it started.
Yeah.
So, okay, well...
Should we move into that one?
Yeah, let's move into that one. So I'm going to run the trailer for Gone in 60 Seconds from 2000. And the 2000 movie, of course, was starring Nicolas Cage, directed by Dominic Cena, if I wrote that down right. And you might know him from Swordfish, California, and Whiteout. The screenplay was Scott Rosenberg. And you guys might remember him from the excellent Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead, the also excellent High Fidelity, and the Guilty Pleasure of Con Air.
Oh, yeah.
How can that guy have written this horrible movie? I don't understand. Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead is like the magnus opus of gangster flicks as far as I'm concerned. And then there's this horrible car movie. What the hell?
Well,
what the hell, guy?
Connor. He does over-the-top Cage really well.
Yeah, he does great Cage. He gives good Cage.
He gives good Cage. You have to put that in the trivia section on IMDb, like user submit that.
this guy gives good cage. But I don't know, I kind of always approach it like maybe he did do the screenplay for it, but like you're hired to do stuff. It's not sure. always yeah, but it's your bad. Own magnum
well,
opus.
I mean, he didn't when you're remaking a movie that has nothing in it other than a car chase.
He's starting from scratch,
and he does. He creates new characters in a little bit. But let's introduce you to this one. I'm just running the one of the shorter trailers here because, you know, the longer ones are a lot of
car noises.
Yeah, so here we go.
Time took you to buy you a ticket. Took you to get your popcorn. 2.5 minutes. Time it took them.
Well, let's go.
To steal your car.
Hello, ladies.
60 seconds.
Move, go.
Go, sweet baby, we're commanding. Hold on, I know you're gonna do what I think you're gonna do.
Go old school. A day to shop, a day to prep.
Okay, let's run.
Gone in 60 seconds.
Okay. There's lots of commercials and trailers for this thing, but, you know, we're going to talk about it a lot, so I didn't want to run, like, 3 minutes of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's pretty concise. It's, this one's got a lot of bigger name actors in it. They definitely were going for the all-star cast, and
they've got a lot of the cast
is all going for the paycheck.
So definitely Nicolas Cage as Memphis Reigns. So the odd naming continues, but is much easier to say.
Yeah.
Ironically, yeah, that's the thing. After seeing the first one, I'm like, Memphis Reigns? No, that seems like a very reasonable name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Angelina Jolie is Sarah Sway Wayland.
She has a name.
Yeah,
they only Sway. Say Sway ever.
It's Sway. I know. I'm not even sure why I bothered writing down the rest of it.
I think it's because if you look at end credits, they'll tell you this information.
I guess.
Probably. Giovanni Ribisi, who I think is amazing and needs some bigger roles lately, because I don't know what the hell he's doing right now. But he's Nicolas Cage's brother in this one, Kip Reigns, and pretty much starts this whole thing off because he starts off getting in trouble.
Yep.
William Lee Scott is Toby. Scott Conn is Tumblr. James Duvall is Freb. Not Fred, but Freb. And that stupid-ass name
goes
with this stupid-ass character.
Yeah.
Willie Patton is Atlee Jackson. Delroy Lindo, when you can't get Lawrence Fishburne, is Detective Roland Castlebeck. Yeah. The awesome Timothy Oliphant, fairly early in his career as Detective Dreykov. Dreykov.
Dreykov.
And I think that's how they named
him. He sounds Russian, Dreykov.
I just thought he had
Detective Dreykov.
Getting over a cold, right? And Chai McBride, Donnie Astricki, Robert Duvall, Otto, and Christopher Eccleston is the bad guy, Raymond Calitri, and of course the awesome silent Vinnie Jones as the Sphinx.
Yeah, Vinnie Jones is hands down the best character because he is silent and doesn't deliver all the shitty lines they've written.
Well, he's
movie.
Got some great intensity, and there are awesome. Some shitty lines, I will totally
agree. Yes, there are.
Even when you got these kind of actors and they just can't deliver
bad.
A line because it's a bad line, you know?
There's only so much you can do.
Try to be funny and like, oh, wow, that's flat.
About 40 minutes into this movie, and I'll remind everybody that at that point they had only stolen one car, and it wasn't related to the list.
Was the heroin car.
No, this was actually before the heroin car comes way late.
You know, they had the drug car in the first movie.
The white Cadillac had the drugs in.
Yeah.
And there was like, and that was what tore the brothers apart, was he wanted to sell the coke, and then of course Buddy's like, no, we do things legit when we steal people's property. So he like, instead of like returning the car, he lit it on fire.
Yeah, and that's the weird thing to me. I'm like going, okay, you've got a drug car. Somebody's going to be looking for this. So you light it on fire, they're never going to find you.
And this that pissed me off about both films. You know, they find the drug car.
And the drug car,
they light
just
the car on
like,
fire in that one. And in this one,
put it back.
Yeah.
Talk about some great motivation for conflict, right? Mm-hmm. Like if they track down who stole their car, now you've got some more conflict happening. I'm like, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, that whole thing can be a centerpiece of a movie.
Yeah, like
you have car thieves who have stolen a car.
Conflict that doesn't
with maybe like a bunch of drugs and a dead body.
Yeah,
and
it makes sense. It doesn't pay off in the first one because they probably shot that scene because it was like real coke and they had to sell it to finance the movie. But it made sense.
It totally looked like flour.
Yeah, it makes sense that it doesn't go anywhere or fit anywhere, and they sort of like tried to hack together a reason because that's how that one was made.
I think the idea
part of that idea is like, wouldn't it be cool if like we showed off like how great a muffler is, that we spill some drugs on the floor and the only way to get it away is to rev the engine.
Oh, well, in the Hitlicky film, I'm sure that's all they
That's what I was thinking.
Wouldn't that be cool?
And
for
so,
sure.
I'm pretty sure they saw the Hitlicky film. They're like, that's a great scene, guys. We got to keep
it
that
is.
Scene.
It actually is a good scene, you know, especially the way they handle it in the new film. You know, the cops sweating them out a little bit. And right there and then, I mean, if he'd seen any of that, they would have been busted. Whereas you get the feeling at the other one, there was a lot more friendliness. I don't know if given the cops in there, I don't know if they would have known what drugs looked like anyway.
No, because the cops, like...
he's an insurance guy.
Yeah,
they don't
the cops
suspect
are there
all.
For, like, some insurance fraud thing, and it was because that one Plymouth, like, showed up.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, wait a minute, this is one you wrote off, and now it's here.
See, that's kind of why I liked that idea that he worked for insurance companies that was in the previous film, that he wasn't just a straight-up criminal.
Yeah.
I liked that bit of gray area where he could be both.
Yeah, and he could cover up his crimes.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Like, I would like to see that. Like, some guy who wants the insurance companies to pay. Like, somebody who works for insurance companies but fucking hates him so much.
Now, in the remake, like Memphis Rain...
Yeah.
From Fight Club?
In the remake, Memphis Reigns is a known car thief who's left town and kind of left the life because his mom told him to.
Yeah.
His mom told him to because it'd be a bad influence on his brother Kip, who at the beginning of the movie is busted stealing
completely
a car.
Botches a Porsche job. Completely.
Yeah. By breaking into a Porsche dealership.
Poorly.
Yeah. Let me get my tool. And he opens the trunk and grabs a brick.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
So they steal it right out of the showroom. And hey, really? They got caught, shockingly.
Yeah, oh my God. Like, subtlety. They weren't thinking subtle at any point.
No. No, and
you're
of course.
You're going to do a boost and you're going to do all this shit?
Yeah, and
dumbass.
He figures he shakes the cops and tracks them back to the warehouse. And of course, they have to.
They have all
rush
the cars
out.
There.
The cars are there. They have to destroy their list. Which is on these the black light boards, so they kind of splash it sloppily and break a light on the way out.
Give it away way later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was thinking we were saying about like the insurance thing and like the like gray area of crime or whatever, and they like touch on that in the new one in like two completely throwaway scenes where it's like, hey, you new computer guy, look up insurance information so we can find the cars. It's like, that makes sense, right?
Sure.
And then with the gray area thing, there's that really, the guy who I thought was Bernie Mac, but it wasn't him the whole time.
G. McBride?
Yeah, I thought, like, he's like, oh, I steal from the rich and give to the needy or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I needy this car.
And I needy this car. Yeah, so like, that was like your like nod to like the weird insurance thing, but like in a practical sense. So like they found a way to make it make sense, but it wasn't as interesting, I guess.
See, I don't know. The practicalness of it makes more sense if he's somebody who knows the system inside and out of insurance.
It's just weird. There's like, because it wasn't like we need insurance to track the cars. It's like we only steal stuff. I don't know. I found it strange. Maybe you're right with the like paying off the guys or whatever, like the insurance payout, but it's still like a bizarre.
But like to, but I don't know, just the idea that it's somebody who's playing both sides of the fence and that they know how it works and they can cover their own tracks. Like imagine that you're a guy, you steal a car and they call you in to investigate the car theft that you did.
Yeah, you could cover your own tracks that way for sure.
Yeah. And even, I don't know, Kip gets out of jail, but, and, you know, he's been boosting cars for this criminal that's Christopher Eccleston. And
love him.
Yeah, he was great.
Not in this movie.
No, he's not in great general, in this movie. He's a, I like him. I mean,
I like him as an actor.
Doctor Who, but at least I knew who he was before.
No
was
one Doctor. Is great in this movie. I'm just going to lay that out right now.
You know, but he's boosting the cars for Raymond Calitri, who is this new big bad in
that's British furniture salesman, yeah.
Yeah, the guy who likes building furniture. Yeah,
they decided to add in some sort of side story. He's really into wood.
They tried to give everybody, try to make them interesting characters, but they're still one-dimensional characters, just enough to make them interesting. But, you know, there's so many of them, that's about it. You give them a weird little personality quirk and let's move on.
This Christopher Eccleston, they add in like this throwaway line, like, I like wood, it's warm and nice, not metal. And that's it. And
it's like
the only more like the only character that's got any kind of depth is Cage's character, but it's Cage, so he makes everything over the top anyway.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, no, Duvall. Duvall has something.
Actually, Duvall's got a fairly rounded character too. He's another
Duvall
retired.
Knows what he's doing, man.
Yeah, he's retired and just running a garage, man.
Yeah. Former chop and shop owner. He has like he's like a father figure to Nicolas Cage.
And I'll say like he's probably the only one in this movie who can deliver the bad dialogue.
Oh,
and still make it good because he's fucking Robert Duvall.
I know, right?
Yeah, he did a pretty good job. I thought, you know, one of the worst, and I didn't recognize him in this movie watching it again, and I had to look him up, but like Timothy Oliphant is fucking terrible in this movie. He has this weird accent that comes and goes.
Timothy Oliphant, but I do not like him in this movie.
I know.
That horrible line after
it hurts
the
me to watch
ball,
him like this.
Are you sure? Because you went through a wall.
Yeah, that's supposed to be funny, and it's just not. Bad. Like, I really want to like that moment, and I don't.
See, and it's weird. Like, I know he has it in him to do, like, he can do some.
He's a good actor.
He can be funny. He can be comedic, but it falls flat here terribly somehow.
Everybody does. There's no anything in this movie that
it hurts.
Shines.
It hurts me to see Timothy this way.
And now, like Angelina Jolie, there's another one that stands out a lot. I think maybe because she's such a big actress these days, but she. I think
she was on the upper cusp. This is after Girl Interrupted, where she'd won her Oscar.
Yeah, she was borderline A-list at this point, but not quite there yet. And she's this dreaded blonde that was part of Memphis's old crew.
And is way young.
You know, she's a mechanic during the day and a bartender at night and like everything is over sexualized with her. Like,
oh my god, she just makes sex face about everything in that movie.
Absolutely, she's constantly on the verge
of
orgasm.
Like every time I watch her and Cage together, I'm like, this is so wrong.
It's awkward.
Like it's like he's been gone a long time, and you're not that old. So like, there's a very creepy pedo vibe.
There's a daddy issue thing happening that we don't see yet.
Yeah.
I mean,
we don't want to see.
It's inappropriate.
Yeah. Well, don't get me wrong. You know, I'm okay with Angelina Jolie on the verge of orgasm for the whole movie, but come on, she's just like it doesn't work.
The chemistry is weird.
Not there.
It makes me so uncomfortable.
But she's overtly sexual with everybody. Like I kind of like
she is.
They build it like there's like this thing, or a past thing between her and Cage. And they're rekindling it.
Yeah.
But then there's like the dumbass kid that gets shot and then she's licking his fingers after and it's like, what the fuck
stupid.
Is that all
about? Yeah, like she's just like,
I was like, I'm like,
nobody will sleep with me. Come on.
I don't know anybody who licks like a friend's fingers when they got something on them.
Yeah, it's gross.
I like my friends, but I'm not licking their fingers.
Yeah, anymore. Like, and they're watching. They're like, "Oh, I want to be that." I'm like, "No, that's disgusting."
It is gross. It's so gross.
It is gross.
She should just be like, sorry, that's in your fingernails. She should be having like a horrible cold right now.
Memphis's main motivation to coming back into town is to protect his brother from getting killed by Raymond Calitri unless he delivers all these vehicles. Now he's only got 2 days to do it.
See, and I like
They burn up a lot of 3 days. They have 3 days. Yeah.
They have 3 days and they scout, for two.
Yeah, they scout for two.
But this is where we have the addition of a motivation as to why these cars have to be somewhere at a certain time and why it's very important that this has to happen.
There is a greater emphasis on car theft in this one for sure. Like the first one is a chase.
I like the heist.
First one is a chase movie.
Yeah.
This movie
yeah.
is a heist movie.
This was definitely more of a heist movie for sure.
For sure. And let's talk about the bumbling other car thief ring that keeps showing up.
Oh yeah,
right. I was supposed to get that, I can't do his accent.
He's just a gangster. I can't do a gangster. I just can't.
Yeah, they're very movie gangster.
That was supposed to be my boost.
Stereotypical.
This is,
really.
Yeah, this is, should have been my job kind of thing.
It's almost insulting.
Yeah, they're so stereotyped and constantly getting in Memphis's face for the first little bit until they chase him down into this diner
where there are cops.
Don't forget when Vinnie Jones blows their fucking car up.
Oh yeah, many times that they get
oh this
kind
is
of
why they
off.
Kind of get
because they're
chased that time.
You know, they go from wanting to beat Memphis up and scare him out of town to wanting to kill his ass because Vinnie Jones joins the gang by blowing up their car. At the time, I don't know if Vinnie Jones knew that there was an issue here. He just blew up a guy's car.
He's very sociopathic in this movie.
I think he saw, happening and is like, oh, well, I'll just do this now. I think that's like they do the whole thing where there's like there's a list of people. We need to get a team together. And he's like on the lower
he's
end the of
bottom
the list.
End, yeah.
I think because they're like going, oh, how much do we want to spend time with somebody with this much?
Yeah, the last two was Sphinx and Sway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they cut to those two, like, Sphinx is a mortician or something.
Yeah, he's a
mortician. They switched to the two, like, bumbly guys. And I hadn't seen this movie since, like, the theatrical run. And I was like, is that the guys? Like, they're too comedic.
I didn't.
Then he's, like, eating a sandwich and puts it on the dead body. And it's, like, the one time you chuckle. But,
yeah.
He's the only guy who, like, acts with conviction.
Mm-hmm. He just has to maintain that intensity all the time.
He just has to be an intense, like, psycho.
Yeah.
His face is permanently really intense.
Yeah, the phone call with a guy who doesn't talk.
Yep. Press a button.
Press a button if it's you.
Yep. Yeah, those guys were ridiculous. And then,
scenes worked.
The diner one was, like, the most hilarious thing. And, like, talk about overselling it with Cage at the window.
Cop car.
Shut up.
It's like, as long as I'm in here. And I'm, like, going, I'm sorry, if I was in a diner and I was yelling that as long as I'm in here with the cops, you can't get me, I'm pretty sure the cops would be asking, hey, so I couldn't help but overhear that you're having some sort of problem.
Yeah, no kidding.
How may I assist you?
And this is after like a 15 or 16 block chase over fences.
Yeah.
Where they like,
they're
like stormtroopers. They couldn't shoot the broadside of anything.
Oh, no.
With a shotgun and they're missing. And like,
it's like watching a G.I. Joe cartoon.
They shoot a chicken. They see
they
the
do
chicken.
Shoot a chicken.
Gets
they vaporize a chicken.
Yeah. Chicken gets blowed up. It's like the only fatality in this
But
movie.
You know, the stuff with the gangsters is always kind of funny because blow up the car, they attach that tow truck.
That tow truck thing is hilarious.
To their axle, and of course that's what gets the cops' attention.
Yeah.
It's like one of those Christmas crackers, hey?
Yeah.
It's like they pulled both ends and gangsters with guns popped out. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Is it just me or did that like pull off really easy?
Really easy, like butter.
Like, that's not a very good vehicle, guys.
No. Well, you know what? I think it was the same Cadillac from the first version, and it was just what was left.
Yeah, it was a Cadillac. That's right. You notice how the cop had a Beamer? The unmarked car was a BMW?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the cop cars were pretty nice.
Yeah.
Oh, every car in this movie was pretty nice.
Yeah, way over the top. It wasn't like a mixed bag of like just weird shit. It was like super high-end.
Yeah, it's like
also
a Transformers movie trying to sell you cars. Yeah,
which also makes sense when you're talking about like how important a car theft ring. They're looking for high-end cars.
Yeah.
That's what's going
to
happen.
And in this one, you buy it. Like, you know, they're okay, yeah, and the other one, they're stealing limos, but there's some weird-ass cars. I'm like, well, why would anybody want that? Like the
big rig.
Big rig. And, you know,
well,
these cars,
they
you understand
the
why they want these cars. It, well, actually,
the big SUVs.
The SUVs.
The Humvee. I don't understand why, but
you know, the Humvee
looked new at the time.
Yeah, they would have been new. Oh, true. But it also looked a lot like that, expensive vehicles. That Baja truck.
Yes.
Right? It I was bet very, you, very similar.
I bet you it was not to the Baja. Yeah, yeah.
I felt it was.
Yeah, yeah. So
with a snake in the back seat, which was a nod to the tiger in the back seat.
Yeah, but that's a weird nod.
I thought that too. Like, well, maybe we should do the tiger, but we should make this scene our own. And that's the stealing that in the parking garage. And they're coming down, and it freaks them out. And of course, that gets the cops' attention.
And they just toss a snake on top of that cop car. I'm like, don't just throw a snake. The poor snake.
Who throws a snake?
Yeah.
That snake was just hanging out in its truck. Minding its own fucking business. Four-ish people showed up.
Busy doing snake stuff, and you all got all up in its grill.
I guess because the snake made slightly more sense than the tiger. I don't know why the snake's just crawling around in the back of the car, because, I mean, when you have it in something, but whatever. And the license plate was snake.
Was snake, yeah.
Was snake.
Like, oh my god. It made a slightly more sense than the other one, and I very, like, small.
And to be fair,
hair.
If it's like a warm vehicle, a snake will like that a lot better than a tiger.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
It's less a reptile. Issues. Yeah. Like,
although they didn't steal any cars in broad daylight in this one, like they were doing in the original.
Oh, no. They were just hopping in cars left, right, and center. It was crazy.
Busy roads.
The one we didn't actually talk about, the one night scene in that movie.
So dark.
They didn't have a single light on that.
Oh, yeah.
So all
that.
You see are headlights and taillights bobbing around and whatever street lamps are there occasionally lighting the scene.
And you could kind of hear a bit of a screech. Like, I was just listening audio-wise.
Whatever they were doing
out.
Was completely wasted because you couldn't see a fucking thing.
Oh, but then there's, like, in this one, this is the other thing that I kept noticing throughout the whole remake, is it's there's a lot of light in this one. Like, every time they're in a car, like, they are uplit. That dashboard's at freaking 10.5, 20. Like, it sounds like they have like 5 interior lights on. That's how much it feels like.
Yeah, everything is very bright in that movie, and it has that kind of like you were saying,
like when
earlier,
they're hiding
that, like,
and turn
sheen,
off the lights,
right?
Yeah,
like,
and when they're hiding and turning off the lights, I'm like going, that's great, but the lights within the cab of your car would notify anybody on the street.
And why was there such, and it must have just been new or a sponsor, but like they were really had a hard on for those 3 Mercedes, hey? It's got laser cut keys. Ooh. Mm. Let's talk about this for 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, they do. And I, you know, I'm not really
it
a car guy,
but
I think maybe the laser cut keys was something new in 2015.
It was new.
15 years ago.
Yeah, laser cut was, anything laser was.
Switchblade key.
Oh, well, you use the word laser and it's got to be expensive.
Yeah, laser cut keys.
Doesn't
laser
that sound impressive?
But those were like some of the last cars to steal was laser cut key Mercedes. Well, and they were like generic.
Which
sedans.
Leads to more cartoon scenes, you know.
Yeah, like, lots.
The keys were compromised because the cops got to the guys of the guy they bought
the
keys
at the dealership.
Off at the dealership. So, you know, they got to him and they had all those vehicles staked out, but they kind of figured it out just in the nick of time. And
Nick Cage of time.
Nick Cage of time. Oh.
That was good.
I didn't plan that. I wish I had. So they had still had the keys from the first boost that Cage wasn't around for, and that were all on impound.
Yeah.
Which also leads to another ridiculous scene. The several ridiculous scenes to get these cars because a dog eats the keys,
and then they
got to
make the dog poop.
And then there's like,
oh, and then you have like a third gang.
Third gang, the Spanish gang.
Well,
yeah.
Like, hey,
what are you guys doing in our hood?
Yep.
Oh god. And so, who gets the jollies by rolling
who
around
the dog poop? All right, we're getting out of here.
The one I watched, because I watched it the second time on YouTube, and mine was edited. I don't know if it was like they didn't swear in the original. Do you remember? Did they swear?
It's pretty clean.
Also, the one I watched had a runtime of 2.5 hours. Just throwing that out there.
That seems kind of long, but it is over a 2-hour movie, so.
It's long.
Yeah. It was very, very long. Yeah. And car chase with Eleanor when we finally get to her. And, like, a way nicer car, beautiful car.
Oh, yeah.
But, I think I timed it at, like, 12 minutes.
The Shelby's beautiful.
They didn't want to risk damaging it. That's why they didn't
do the
scene.
That's a sweet ride.
Oh, but what winds up happening to that poor Shelby?
Well, and they say, too, that they built 7 Eleanors. 5 were, like, wrecked in the movie. And then Nick Cage and Jerry Bruckheimer each took one of the last two, and Nick Cage drives his, and Jerry Bruckheimer's afraid of it and won't drive it.
Oh, fair enough.
But well, that's pointless.
Yeah, sell it.
when they're in the drainage thing, you know, that's in all those, like, lower states movies.
Yeah.
Like Terminator and stuff. When he's burning in there, what do they clock him at? Like 190 miles an hour when he hits the NOS, and the helicopter can't keep up, and he's like, it's not an Apache. That's good.
Yeah.
I love the car chase scene.
You just go higher.
That's what I kept thinking. I'm like, if you go higher,
you don't know, it's not outrunning the helicopter, just go up.
Yeah, what was his plan? He was like trying to hit it with the legs of the helicopter.
I don't know.
He's only supposed to maintain a visual. That is his entire job.
Yeah. What the fuck, guys?
Now, in the original car chase, it's almost all wide shot. Like, you're watching the car do the car stunts, and that's, like, pretty much the whole 40
minutes. And all the
minutes.
Cars around it.
And all the cars around it. Mm-hmm. But in this movie, and probably because of they didn't want to damage the car or budget or whatever, they do a lot of interior shots.
Oh, look, like lots of cuts. Lot of cuts. Well, you got to cut back to, because you almost never see the driver in the original film.
Never. And in this one, you do a lot. But one of the things,
show the intensity of his driving. Oh, sure. Then the driving, then the intensity of the driving. Well,
yeah. Nicolas Cage's fucking face never changes that whole movie. So, like, whatever. He's got the same dumb look when he's driving around a corner at 90 miles an hour. But I really liked, and I remembered this from the theater when I saw it, and I really liked it, was him working the clutch, and, like, they would cut and show him, like, shifting and like, driving the car.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was really cool, and a lot of car movies don't do that. Yeah. And it was just neat. So it's like, oh, this guy has some skill doing this. And I heard, too, that Nick Cage did a lot of the stunt driving.
Oh, yeah. He was heavily trained in a lot of the stunt driving. Yeah,
they trained everybody. But
he really enjoyed it.
Like, yeah, he still races, actually.
Still does it as a hobby.
Yeah.
And hasn't crashed near as much as Kalicki did.
No.
Oh, no.
I think Kalicki made a career of crashing, but
I think he did.
Now, he does.
I don't know. He crashed a lot, like, which leads me to wonder, like, how good was he?
Well, he's financing his own movie.
When the crew's all set to go in this movie, there's a bit of a ritual that he does, which I think is hilarious.
It is painful to watch,
and I am going to inflict it on you one more time. So here it is.
I am a bad man. Thanks for doing this. Keep it real. Think slow. We should get through just fine. Little Rider, Donnie, Little Rider.
Okay, let's ride. Now, Lowrider, you know, if you're going to use something for a theft mantra, Lowrider is the way to go.
For sure.
For sure. But the scene, you know, actually, it's so ridiculous that I like it.
Oh, again, it's hilarious.
Jolie,
I love it.
Jolie's
so
got
bad.
Her orgasm face going. She's just like, oh, just I'm sitting on that speaker just right.
Yeah, totally. And all the young guys are like, the fuck?
What the fuck is this song?
And Cage and
Duvall's just like, go with it, go with it.
Guys, just shut up and just, it's fine.
We'll post a animated GIF or however you say that on the internets of what he does in that scene when we post this. We should
I'll link that. I think I'll just link it to the YouTube scene directly.
Yeah,
I'll put the link in the descriptions to this YouTube piece.
Because it's painful. Everything. That was one of my only notes in this movie was that every scene was incredibly awkward to watch. Like, it was
I love this scene. It was stupid.
For a couple minutes, I was sitting with my eyes closed, and my wife is like, are you all right? I'm like, I just can't watch this anymore. Oh, man.
But here's the thing. Watching this is less arduous of a task than watching the previous one.
You know, I'm inclined to disagree.
I can't watch any of the people, like, until it gets to car chase in the first one. I found it unwatchable.
I do own this movie. I like them both for equally similar reasons.
The 74 is unwatchable in dialogue.
It is. Yeah, it's hard to watch. And, except that chase scene makes it all worthwhile. And
that's the only reason to watch it.
And in the Umbrella Lady.
Yeah.
This one, I mean, I like the parts of the whole. They don't always work.
Oh no.
Often don't work, but. You know, you can recognize the stuff. And I like the chase sequences in this one as well. They're just not nearly as long, but they're more unique. They're going for something a little more entertaining, stunts. It looks, you know, crowded city stuff. The bridge stuff is pretty neat. Of course, they have to have another epic jump in there.
Oh, yeah.
And it is terrible.
Well,
it did not age well.
Well, no, it doesn't age as well, and it's completely...
it's CG-assisted.
Yeah, it's CG-assisted and super choreographed, and that's unfortunate now when you get these car movies. There's not a lot of practical stuff anymore, and you can see it on the screen at the end of the day.
And that Eleanor survived that impact a lot better than the real Eleanor.
Oh,
yeah. The 73 Eleanor was like, fuck,
oh,
yeah.
It was
around. Fuck.
And that, I mean, that...
Well, it hit
solidly.
It hit
cars.
Less light poles this time around.
True. I think the only damage to that car pre-jump was he nicked a mirror.
Yeah,
back.
He nicked the mirror. Yeah, no, that car didn't really suffer any damage.
Like,
it wasn't hit by
mistake.
Anything. It was unscathed until that jump.
And
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, and then things start going to shit after that.
But there was less to hit. Like, he was kind of like, you know, drove backwards for a while and like turned.
But that's not the denouement of the film anymore. That's just, there's your chase sequence, but now you have to have the showdown.
Yeah, it was so played down. Like, I think I clocked it at 12 minutes from 40, and like way less.
I could just see you there with the stopwatch.
Yeah, I stopwatched. I was like, this isn't 40 minutes, this is bullshit. But,
well, I think what they did in this one, too, is they dedicated more time to the actual stealing of all the other cars.
Totally.
Whereas the other film, it's sort of like you'll kind of see flashes of it, and that's it.
Yeah, you had a theft montage for 10 minutes in the original, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, and this one, like, you have like a good solid 20 minutes of you can watch them going in and getting stuff.
Totally. One of the things that they expand on in this new one, or no, they do it better in the original, sorry, is that, you know, we have to steal Eleanor like 3 or 4 times because it's like a cursed car, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they're constantly trying to steal the same 73 Mustang, which apparently everybody fucking owns in 1974. Mm-hmm. Where now we get to the Shelby GT, and it's like one of a kind, literally one of a kind, built for that movie. And they just like in passing go, oh, he's got some history. The end. And then he's like, oh, he gets in the car and in Nick Cage style oversells, well, we got history. And like, they never like give any reason why that car is like such the white whale for him.
Mm-hmm.
Where like in the original, it was
they
like,
show
yeah,
you.
We get it, right?
Yeah.
Like, because you can't get one.
That history happens as dialogue. That's about it.
And like barely.
Barely. It's you know, the writer trick to get you by.
How would you do that? Like, how would you show that?
Flashback in the open.
Well, no, I think
something.
You know, it's maybe not as satisfying, but it's a clever way to say, yeah, okay, he's tried and failed to steal this car before. It's just a quick way to get around it in the dialogue. And
like,
okay,
I mean,
that's fine. That's a good writer trick. It's actually one of the better pieces of dialogue because it gets you to the point where you need to be.
Well, and when he's talking to the detective about it, the detective does taunt him about Eleanor.
Yeah.
Yeah, the detective knows, and yeah, they definitely have a lot more history than the police in the original, like, are just kind of there.
Oh, sure, yeah. Right? You know, that Helicki's character never actually got caught, so the police aren't aware of him.
But mm-hmm. Nick Cage got close to getting caught by these guys.
And it was was on their radar. You know, that's what these guys do.
Yeah, it was to say car theft went down like 47% when he left.
Maybe this movie takes place after the 74 movie, and that's why he's got the history.
So, H.B. Helicki knocks up Pumpkin.
Memphis is actually Helicki's character, and it's a sequel. I'm just spinning it like Evil Dead, like last week.
No.
Probably not.
I'm going to go with no.
I would have loved it.
Because Nicolas Cage is a much better driver.
I would have loved it if his mom's name was Pumpkin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that would have been awesome. She would have been pretty good at Pumpkin.
She would have.
Yeah, she's a, like, grizzled waitress at the, like, weird country diner or whatever, yeah. That was kind of a weird scene, too, at first, because she doesn't look too much older than Nicolas Cage, to be honest.
No,
I thought
know,
it was, like,
right?
old flame at first watching it again, and then I was like, oh, wait, no, it's his mom.
Like, it's the weird... Nicolas Cage is, like, a strange age for this movie.
He's, like,
not right.
Too old and too young.
But I think it's, like, they wanted Nicolas Cage. They're like, It'll be fine. He's it'll be
pretty
fine.
Big at this time period, though. Like, I don't
yeah.
know.
Oh yeah, 2000. Oh, this is post Rock. He's doing pretty.
Oh
good.
Yeah, you know, it was Rock, Con Air, and this, and like it was
Face
just,
Off.
They were Face Ugh. Off. I mean, they all were, but they How all did huge box office.
Oh yeah,
right?
No, yeah, he was doing yeah. huge yeah. box office.
And
so.
Yeah, I watched Face Off not that long ago, and it doesn't age well either.
Oh, but it's didn't terrible, age well when it but came it's enjoyable as badness.
I enjoyed it at the time, and but again, different eyes.
You know,
it's one. It's one you can enjoy if you realize you're getting into a bad movie.
It's another one, and it's so fucking long. Oh my
You know, when you
God.
Switch faces with a dude that's a foot taller and 140 pounds heavier, I just don't buy it.
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. Off, the, right off the bat, it's yeah. just stupid, but...
I don't think I mean, Nick Cage has made a good movie since Raising Arizona, to be honest.
I get the feeling he likes doing action movies that are ridiculous. Like, Con Air is ridiculous, and that's why I love Con Air, is because it's so ridiculous.
It's like this movie, though, where it's, like, supporting cast
yeah.
is strong, so it, like, overshadows Nicolas Cage's inability yeah. to be an actor.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's
but they
got...
they don't shine in this movie.
They're not big characters, but the characters are entertaining. Like, his crew are, for the most part, entertaining.
They're more colorful. They're more memorable than the crew in the original.
For sure.
Yeah. They're all throwaway, like, 70s guys.
Yeah, I couldn't even tell you what any of them
yeah,
looked
I don't,
like.
Yeah, I couldn't remember. I can't
well,
remember
there
their
was
cast
black
names.
Black guy, the brother.
Mustache.
Black guy, brother, guy. Mustache.
And obligatory
and pumpkin.
Chick.
And Pumpkin. Yeah. Only I remember because her name is just fucking Pumpkin.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Pumpkin.
Fucking Pumpkin.
And no one fucking Pumpkin. No one cracks, hey? You're like a whole movie full of like your friends and family and you name your character Pumpkin and no one cracks a smile once.
I know, right?
It's a lot of restraint.
Like, was that a normal thing in the 70s?
And I don't think they had a lot of money for like takes, right? Like, I have a feeling that every shot we got was like
first shot.
Right? We got it. Moving
that's
on.
That's why I figured there's so much ADR over top of people whose mouths aren't moving, but it's supposed to be their dialogue.
Yeah, they probably froze up and they're like, meh, fuck it. We'll fix it in post.
Yeah.
Wait, we don't know how to do that.
We'll fix it in post. The new movie's really racist, which I think is hilarious. There's, like, the black gang, which is super racist, atypical, stereotypical black gang.
It was pretty racist in the first one, too.
It was. Oh, yeah. There's the Spanish gang that's, like, super stereotyped.
That one was bad.
There's, you know, mini black gangster guy, Mirror Man, who's over the top racial stereotype gangster.
Master P.
But let's not forget,
he was
the greatest racial stereotype in this movie is the guy who isn't Bernie Mac has his new life as a driving instructor, and they hired, like, the worst Asian actress in the world to play the worst driver in the world, and she's a recurring character, and it's like, hey, remember how Asian women are terrible drivers?
Oh, yeah.
Don't you remember that? We're going to go back to it three times. We're going to remind you that they're terrible. By the way, they're terrible. No Asians in the crew. Just saying.
No.
You know, they hire Jet Li in the Expendables to kick a dude in the face, but Jet Li doesn't steal any cars either.
Hey, Fast and the Furious, you have Han Solo.
Is there an Asian guy in Fast and the Furious? Han. They don't steal cars in that. Do they steal cars in that movie? I haven't watched
they
it.
Don't, but they drive well, to beat Han. Hell, and
yeah,
Han is great.
Han's a great driver,
Han
actually.
Is my favorite.
He's a very good driver. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had a whole movie set in Tokyo, so...
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Yeah.
I watched, like, the first one.
Nobody... You look at the numbers...
Nobody saw Tokyo Drift.
Which was the one where everyone's favorite masculine Spanish actress, Michelle Rodriguez, she gets killed in which one?
Three?
Second one?
No, three. Three's,
no, it's
Tokyo,
three.
Three's Tokyo
oh,
Drift.
Oh, four.
So it'd be four.
She gets killed in four.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought she could
kill. That's Fast and Furious.
No, because the first one is, like, everybody. Second one, Paul Walker's the only one there. But they've added Tyrese and Ludacris. Three is Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, because
and then four, they get everybody back.
Fast and Furious, and that's the one that, that's what.
Where
motivates.
Is the drug cartel in Mexico?
Yeah, that's the one that.
I haven't seen that
motivates Vin Diesel. So.
I've only seen the first, I guess.
Oh, I'd love to do a whole Fast and Furious thing, even though there's no remakes there. But
we'll just talk about them. The sequels, remakes. Find out next time.
Oh, yeah. No, they are not.
To be continued on the next episode of Invasion of the Real.
So no, like the racist stereotypes were very, very
in
strong in this movie.
Actually, because I hadn't seen this movie since the theater, I forgot who was in it and in what capacity. And then when he goes to see Angelina Jolie, her voice just reminded me of Michelle Rodriguez. And because it's that right time period and right kind of movie,
yeah,
when she was under the car as a mechanic, I just totally expected Michelle Rodriguez to pop out.
And she would have been, yeah, she would have totally felt at home. And Nicolas Cage has been tied in the past to Fast and the Furious. They've approached him and he turned him down for this last one, but I think they're still
interested. I'm hoping he comes the next one.
And he's done quite a few, like, I mean, Drive Angry, and I guess you could throw
Drive
the
Angry.
Shitty,
how insane was that?
I guess you could throw the shitty Ghost Rider movies in there too.
Yeah. That's a motorcycle.
There's more than one. Oh my god!
Well, Drive Angry.
There's two.
Drive Angry was Ghost Rider done well.
Drive Angry was an interesting experiment.
He's done three Ghost Rider movies. Two of them that were called Ghost Rider sucked, and then the one that wasn't was actually pretty entertaining.
Yeah. Steal Stuff in Bangkok Dangerous. I never saw that movie.
Oh, I haven't seen that one either.
I have seen Bangkok Dangerous, and honestly, I don't remember a lot about.
There's another one where he's like a Russian gangster. It's fun. He's done a lot of stuff.
We could probably do a Nicolas Cage podcast.
I think we probably could. But anyway,
I'm sure he's done some more remakes, so we'll revisit Nicolas. We know he's done more remakes because I can't wait to do Wicker Man.
Oh, God.
But we'll space anyway, space out the Cage.
Back to this one.
Yes.
Back to this one. Yeah, I don't know. I found having more of a plot in this, the remake was nicer, but like I say, it's too over the top in certain ways. Like, it's not good. Like, they threw everything at this thing. They're like, we're going to throw all these actors at it that are really good actors. Mm-hmm. And we're going to throw all these cars at it. We're going to throw all this action at it. And it's still not quite working.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that some of the stuff is really flat with the dialogue. But I mean, I'm not expecting Oscars or whatever. I think it should be deliberately over the top, given the original film. But oh man, some of the awkward deliveries, and it just
the worst line. What do you think is more exciting, having sex or stealing cars?
I think that's the worst line. Give me Memphis or give me Kip. It doesn't matter. When it rains, it pours. That is the worst line.
Oh, no,
delivered
no.
Delivered by Chris Eccleston.
Two Rogers don't make it right.
That whole scene was painful.
But I felt that whole scene was like, okay, we got to give Nick one day. we got to calm Nick down. So let's give Nick a day before Nick can do this.
Yeah, it was totally
all ridiculous. I see is like, found out there's too many people in this town with too much bloody money.
Yeah.
Eccleston, who is a fairly capable actor, although he's in some pretty bad movies too.
He's also in some really great movies.
Yeah.
I
loved him as Doctor Who, and 28 Days Later is fantastic.
Shallow Grave from 1994 is amazing.
Oh, his greatest role is Malekith in Thor.
But Destro, not so much.
Destro.
Yeah.
Two major comic book villains, eh?
After his Doctor Who stint, there was definitely some awkwardness in his career for a little bit. His guest appearances on Heroes was also pretty terrible. But
oh yeah, he was in that for like 5 episodes. I was thinking, you know, because I was setting up for it earlier in the podcast, and then I got sidetracked with all the craziness, and then you were starting to set up it just now, and you didn't. But you're probably thinking what I'm thinking. And probably Trish is thinking that maybe the terrible dialogue delivery is an homage to the original. Yep. Maybe they're doing it on purpose.
I do get the feeling that there's probably a little bit of, if not a lot of purpose to it.
Because there's a lot of nods. Like, I was impressed that they fit a lot in.
There are, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
Eleanor's both at the same building.
You're saying there's a lot of nods. There's a lot to fit in. There's not a lot to fit in, but they're just the five major nods you have to do.
You're right.
But the two Eleanors in the original and in this are both in an underground parkade at the International Towers.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's like a direct nod.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, actually, there are for not having much. I wish they would have had the funky water heater.
Oh, the water heater.
The water heater. I don't know. That was awesome.
Nah, black lights.
Well, it's not. They just didn't have something to hide. Like I say, like he's just. They're straight up criminals this time.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I mean, with a slight conscience, you know, they're not. It's all about the job and protecting, you know, the kid.
Yeah.
Kip. But
you gotta forget Kip.
Yeah.
Kip's kind of a douche.
But at the end of the day...
Oh, Kip's an idiot.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I'm like, I kept reminding myself, but they're all thieves. Like, they're all bad guys. Oh, it's not like they're moral either.
No, there's always that, like, thieves code thing, right? He has that in Things to Do in Denver.
Yeah.
Garcia tries to save everybody,
right? They are... A lot of them had left the life and were trying to go straight, so they were, you know, and maybe that's the tragedy of it, they being drawn back in to, for honorable reasons.
It's like The Godfather.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. it's being drawn back in because somebody's an idiot. Yeah. Like, that to me would be like, I left this life behind and I have to come back for this shit? I would be pissed.
Yeah, like, I left this life so you wouldn't get into this life.
Yeah, yeah, he left so you wouldn't do this. Now you're doing this and you're in deep shit. Now he's in deep shit. Now I'm pissed at you. Like, I don't. Why yeah. nobody didn't beat the crap out of Kip by the end boggles my mind.
I don't know. I would have left him in the fucking car crusher.
Yeah, that was a good scene.
Except for the fact that he's Giuliani Ribisi and he's awesome.
If at the end of it is like when we saved his ass, he'd be like, okay, now that we're done and that guy's dead and he's not going to kill you anymore, now I'm going to fucking kill you.
Yeah, and that terribly
I've earned
scene.
The goddamn right.
There aren't a lot of non-awkward scenes. Which one are you referring to,
Jim? No, I was thinking of, like, Chris Eccleston's death in that stupid shootout.
The die-hard death?
The die-hard death. The obligatory shootout, and then Nicolas Cage's flying fucking Bruce Lee kick to the face or whatever he does. And then he just has, like, that eye contact, like, slow nod between him and the guy, and then, like, everything's fine. Like, it's really dumb. Everything about this movie is dumb. Maybe it's on purpose. I don't know.
I don't know. But the one thing that isn't dumb about this movie, the soundtrack is
awesome.
Fucking amazing.
Did you do your car research like we discussed? Did you find out the 1974 cost of the cars compared to this movie?
Oh, no, I didn't.
So the thing of that, because I had it on my mind when I was watching it, because you had talked about it. So in the original movie, 48 cars, mm-hmm. $400,000, mm-hmm. 1974, advanced $200,000. Right?
Okay.
To get the job done, and then, you know, presumably they deliver the car, or he just keeps driving Eleanor. Yeah. The fuck knows, right? In this movie, 50 cars total of $200,000. So they're actually stealing more cars for less money in the remake.
Yes. And that's ridiculous.
And by 74 standards, I'm like, wow.
That's a lot of money.
These aren't doing this for very much money.
Yeah.
They bid on the job way too low. That's why they got it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's why the space shuttles always blow
up. But there was a bunch of kids trying to.
See, that's why the other gang shouldn't have been upset. It's like going, sorry, but we bid lower. You should have gone over your submission for this particular contract.
That's not a lot of money per car.
No, not at all.
You think some of those Rolls Royces
for such a high risk job,
$200,000-$300,000 cars, and
Ferraris.
$5,000.
Yeah.
All the Ferraris, yeah.
The Ferraris themselves are a lot.
And what, they had six or seven Ferraris, I think, something like that?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not much money.
No, so like the motivation just in my mind wasn't there at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like you look at how many people are in the crew, it's $200,000 getting like...
And like, did...
$40,000?
Did Buddy like maybe? Not deliver any cars the first round? Because I'm thinking like he doubled up on a couple.
Oh no, he didn't. Oh, because no, they were impounded.
They all got impounded.
But yeah, but right. What happened was they stole three from the impound lot, so those were stolen twice.
Stolen twice, okay.
So three that he stole prior actually ended up being in the actual final order.
Because a Mercedes sedan, I guess, is a pretty rare thing in 2000.
Yeah.
You live in this city, you can't trip over one, but...
Yeah, see, that, and that's the weird thing, too, where it's kind of like they all got impounded. Like, why the impound wasn't a larger role? Because, like, if you're looking for a rare, rare car and there only might be one in the city, you have to go in the impound lot. That could have been a whole thing.
Well, it was, and it was really painful to watch when... You know, Uncle Gangster there, whatever that guy,
Mirror Man,
is doing his stupid, like, look at the doll.
What was that? What was that?
Where'd that doll come from? Look at the doll. It's like, and the guy's
bimp,
like,
uh-huh. Bimp, he's like, this
I'm
guy's special in a weird way.
It was awful.
Terrible.
I mean, he was awful every time he was on screen. It was just like,
he only did three movies
because
he's terrible.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Such a horrible stereotype.
See, I didn't enjoy him. And, like, I found the stupid character who stole the heroin car was more enjoyable than Mirror Man.
So
he was an idiot, but I still found him more enjoyable.
I actually have seen him in some half decent
movies.
He does play morons.
He's in a lot of Greg Araki movies, I think, too.
Yeah.
I thought that he was, like, the snitch guy, but he shaved his beard because he kind of looked the same. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Snitch guy that they rough up like twice. He even knows like everything about the car theft ring for some reason.
Oh, yeah. Bodhi Elfman, I think it is.
I can't even remember.
And, like Danny Elfman's brother or something like that.
Really? So he was in Oingo Boingo?
I think.
Hmm.
Yeah. And then there's Eric Gross, who's like the Mercedes guy who gets caught and really oversells, like, you guys have to leave me alone.
Everything's oversold in this movie. Everything.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So,
I don't know. I can enjoy a bad Nick Cage. I just can.
I love the lack of cell phones. That's like interesting to see. They were using walkie talkies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, probably. If you look back 2000, North America still wasn't huge. Like I didn't get my first cell phone until I went to the UK in like 2002.
I think that was just when I was getting my first cell phone.
I got mine in 2001, I think.
Yeah. Right around then. Yeah. It was like, yeah, exactly. Begrudgingly for me as well.
Motorola Razr, as I remember, was my first cell phone.
Mine was a Sanyo. It was actually quite good, but it was a mini version of a brick phone. Everybody kept making fun of me for having this large phone, even though it wasn't really large, because anybody's flip phone that flipped out was actually bigger than my phone. Mine just was
yours that just
size,
was that one size all the time.
All the time. And so everybody kept making fun of my damn phone. And then finally it kind of bought the farm, battery wouldn't stay in and all that stuff. So I bought the smallest flip phone I could find. And then all the phones started fucking getting big again. Yeah. Everybody's like, plus, oh, look at your little cute
everybody
little
discovered
phone.
That you could get porn on your phone, right? So we had this like we had this period of time, like 4 or 5 years, where phones were getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and then someone was like, hey, wait a minute, I can look at tits on this thing. And then now you get like those phones that are like giant tablets.
They're
like,
yeah,
a tablet.
You can surf. Why just get
on those
a tablet? Why have a phone then at that point? If you have to hold it with both hands, it's not a goddamn phone.
It was interesting to see, especially because like 6 years later, and we talked about this on our Wes Craven retrospective, which if you haven't listened to,
please go back and watch.
Go back and listen to it. But I talk a little bit about Pulse, which is 6 years after this movie, and fucking everybody has a cell phone, right?
Yeah.
And that's like, so it's interesting to see that progression. So when somebody like, what are they called? What's the millennials? Is that like the teenagers?
Yeah, I think
so. What are them teenagers called now? But they
I stopped paying attention after Generation Y.
Yeah, so I wonder, like, going back to a movie like that, if they would notice that.
I don't. Yeah, maybe. Like, they might be like, why don't they have cell phones?
Yeah,
like,
we have a couple more calls
to
make.
Saturation
and it's like
saturation for cell phones was really quickly. Yeah, like, it kind of, like, in a couple of years, it really did come full circle. But that, I think somebody had mentioned that. I can't remember, some other podcast they're talking about, like, Fast and the Furious. They're like, why are they using walkie-talkies? They could have, like, earpieces and cell phones.
Bluetooth. Yeah.
What about hands-free? Wow. No, well, you know, the cell phones are everywhere now because the reptile government can monitor us or whatever the hell. I don't know. If any of our listeners are conspiracy theorists,
Bill C-51,
please,
everybody.
Please explain to us why. I don't get it.
But. Well, your location is still on,
and
even
you
when
can
you think
tell
you turn
us
it off.
Why on Twitter at Invasion Remake, invasiontheremake@gmail.com, and of course, Invasion the Remake on Facebook.
Yep.
Tell us about the lizards. Please. Yep, tell us about the lizards. Please, God. People. Please, for the love of God, tell us about the lizards.
The lizards. The lizards stuck in the Jeep that you're boosting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you guys got anything else to say about these movies? I mean, I had a blast doing this one, honestly. It was goofy fun.
Yeah, it's definitely out of my regular film-watching zone, for sure. Between the two of them, I really, really enjoyed the first one. I would probably go back and watch that before the Nick Cage one, only because, like I said before, I really appreciate the effort and determination and fucking craziness that went into making it. Mm. And knowing that now, to watch it again with all its weird disconnect, it just makes it so much more enjoyable, because you know that it, like, it was this labor of love and just insane gonzo filmmaking. I don't think I can't think of a movie that is made that way that has been put together so well. And
okay,
if anybody can,
sorry, I know of one that was done that way that's put together really badly.
Yeah.
No, but it worked, and it was an entertaining movie.
At the end of the day, that movie, I was thoroughly entertained by it, probably by some unintentional filmmaking, but, you know, it's badly cut, badly acted.
ADR to fucking death.
And cut really strangely, ADR to death. There's a lot that's just fucked with this movie. And it all comes together in this goofy fun. Like, it is, in all its badness, it's still enjoyable. Like, I could probably watch that 40-minute chase sequence again. I don't know about the first part, but I could definitely watch.
No.
I could definitely watch that last half over again.
Oh yeah, I could just watch the chase scene. I'd be perfectly content with that. I don't even want to know why he's in the car. I don't even want to know if it's stolen. I just love that Jay Zane. That's all I need to know.
Not that there's much else in there, but yeah, you know, I really enjoyed that first movie. I hadn't seen it before. I'd seen actually Gone in 60 Seconds quite a few times.
Yeah.
So I enjoy it mostly, but for the most part, the dialogue is really flat, and it the more I see it now with different eyes, the less I the less entertaining it actually is.
Yeah,
and actors you now appreciate, and you're like, oh man, I guess we all had to take something to get there.
But I see it. I like watching it if I can pick out certain people in Gone 60 Seconds. I really enjoy it. Like the guy who plays Atlee, I love him anything he's in. Mm-hmm. He's great. Duvall, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Frances Fisher, who has a very tiny part as Duvall's girlfriend, also very good. I like little bits and pieces of it. She does. She says hello and a couple other things. Yeah. But she fucking nails those lines.
I liked Angelina Jolie because every time she was on screen, I thought we were going to go have a porn moment.
Yeah.
See, I didn't.
It's a gusher.
It was that really bad opening scene before they start fucking for 30 minutes.
But to see if. Oh, in a master class in why chemistry is so important for your two leads, this is what that is.
Yeah, no,
because watching Nicolas Cage,
it had those awkward
kind
of setups.
It's just you're like, wait,
oops,
oh.
I dropped my wrench.
Yeah.
Well, not even that. I'm watching them touch each other. And I'm like, I feel uncomfortable right now.
This car's full of drugs. Yeah, you like business in the trunk, do you?
Yeah, terrible. It's just nuts.
They stole that car from Bill Cosby.
Ooh, come on
too
now.
Soon. Oh. Too soon?
He's still alive.
Well, no, the car was conscious at the time.
Yes, it was.
Okie dokie. We might get letters on
yeah,
that.
We'll get letters on that.
That was awesome.
Cosby's a dirtbag, I'll say it.
Well, yeah, he's got just as many complaints as cars they stole.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Actually, yeah, more.
It's not about Cosby, so
no.
At least Cosby not. Raped more women than cars were stolen in this movie, guys.
Guys.
Anyway.
All right. On that note,
I think we've said what we can say about this, so thanks for joining us, and I'm Jason.
I'm Jeff.
I'm Trish.
And we are out of here.
We are gone in 60 seconds.
God,
baby. Woo! Y'all gonna make me lose my mind. Up in here, up in here. Y'all gonna make me go all out. Up in here, up in here. Y'all gonna make me act a fool. Up in here, up in here. Y'all gonna make me lose my cool. Up in here, up in here. If I got to bring it to you cowards, then it's gonna be quick. I know you made them in the jail before. Suck my dick. And all the motherfuckers catch you run with. Get done with. Come quick. How the fuck you going? Poke the dog or some bum shit. They go to gun click. Now I'm one shit. All over some dumb shit. Ain't that some shit? Any-